his instructions.
You... Anakin shook his head in wonder while his smile grew to a grin he thought might split open his cheeks. You are amazing.
Thank you, Master Anakin. Though credit for that is due largely.
C-3PO made an elegantly gracious bow.
To my creator.
Anakin could only go on grinning. With that, the golden protocol droid laid an affectionate hand on R2's dome.
Come along, R2. I have found the most delightful body shop down in the Liparshan Way.
They moved away, whirring and clanking after the senators who were already off among the holonet crews. Anakin's smile faded as he watched them go. He felt a presence at his shoulder and turned to find Palpatine beside him, with a warm smile and a soft word, as he always seemed to be when Anakin was troubled. "What is it, Anakin?" the Chancellor asked kindly. "Something is disturbing you. I can tell." Anakin shrugged and gave his head a dismissive shake, embarrassed. "It's nothing." "Anakin, anything that might upset a man such as yourself is certainly something. Let me help."
"There's nothing you can do. It's just..."
Anakin nodded after 3PO and R2. "I was just thinking that, even after all I've done, C-3PO is still the only person I know who calls me master."
"Ah, the Jedi Council."
Palpatine slid an arm around Anakin's shoulders and gave him a comradely squeeze.
"I believe I can be of some use to you in this problem after all."
"You can."
"I should be very much surprised if I couldn't."
Palpatine's smile was still warm, but his eyes had gone distant.
"You may have noticed that I have a certain gift," he murmured, "for getting my way."
Chapter 9. Padme. From the shadow of a great pillar, stretching up into the reddening afternoon that leaked through the vaulted roof of transparisteel over the atrium of the Senate office building, she watched senators clustering in through the archway from the Chancellor's landing platform. And then she saw the Chancellor himself, and C-3PO. And yes, that was R2-D2, and so he could not be far behind. And only then did she finally find him among them, tall and straight, his hair radiation bleached to golden streaks, and on his lips a lively smile that opened her chest and unlocked her heart. And she could breathe again. Through the swirl of holonet reporters and the chatter of senators and the gently comforting tones of Palpatine's most polished, reassuringly paternal voice, she did not move, not so much as to lift a hand or turn her head. She was silent and still, only letting herself breathe, feeling the beat of her heart. And she could have stood there forever, in the shadows, and had her fondest dreams all fulfilled simply by watching him be alive. But when he moved away from the group, pacing in soft conversation with Bail Organa of Alderaan, and she heard Bail saying something about the end of Count Dooku and the end of the war, and finally an end to Palpatine's police state tactics, her breath caught again, and she held it, because she knew the next thing she heard would be his voice. "I wish that were so," he said, "but the fighting will continue until General Grievous's spare parts. The Chancellor is very clear on this, and I believe the Senate and the Jedi Council will both agree." And beyond that, there was no hope she could be happier, until his eye found her silent, still shadow, and he straightened, and a new light broke over his golden face, and he said, "Excuse me," to the Senator from Alderaan, and a moment later, he came to her in the shadows, and they were in each other's arms. Their lips met, and the universe became, one last time, perfect. This is Padme Amidala. She is an astonishingly accomplished young woman, who in her short life has been already the youngest ever elected queen of her planet, a daring partisan guerrilla, and a measured, articulate, and persuasive voice of reason in the Republic Senate. But she is, at this moment, none of these things. She can still play at them. She pretends to be a senator. She still wields the moral authority of a former queen, and she is not shy about using her reputation for fierce physical courage to her advantage in political debate. But her inmost reality, the most fundamental, unbreakable core of her being, is something entirely different. She is Anakin Skywalker's wife. Yet wife is a word too weak to carry the truth of her. Wife is such a small word, such a common word, a word that can come from a downturned mouth with so many petty, unpleasant echoes. For Padme Amidala, saying, "I am Anakin Skywalker's wife," is saying neither more nor less than "I am alive." Her life before Anakin belonged to someone else, some lesser being to be pitied, some poor, impoverished spirit who could never suspect how profoundly life should be lived. Her real life began the first time she looked into Anakin Skywalker's eyes and found in there not the uncritical worship of little Annie from Tatooine, but the direct, unashamed, smoldering passion of a powerful Jedi. A young man, to be sure, but every centimeter a man. A man whose legend was already growing within the Jedi Order and beyond. A man who knew exactly what he wanted and was honest enough to simply ask for it. A man strong enough to unroll his deepest feelings before her without fear and without shame. A man who had loved her for a decade with faithful and patient heart, while he waited for the act of destiny he was sure would someday open her own heart to the fire in his. But though she loves her husband without reservation, love does not blind her to his faults. She is older than he, and wise enough to understand him better than he does himself. He is not a perfect man. He is prideful and moody and quick to anger. But these faults only make her love him the more. For his every flaw is more than balanced by the greatness within him. His capacity for joy and cleansing laughter. His extraordinary generosity of spirit. His passionate devotion, not only to her, but also in the service of every living being. He is a wild creature who has come gently to her hand, a vine tiger purring against her cheek. Every softness of his touch, every kind glance or loving word is a small miracle in itself. How can she not be grateful for such gifts? This is why she will not allow their marriage to become public knowledge. Her husband needs to be a Jedi. Saving people is what he was born for. To take that away from him would cripple every good thing in his troubled heart. Now she holds him in their infinite kiss with both arms tight around his neck. Because there is a cold dread in the center of her heart that whispers, this kiss is not infinite at all, that it's only a pause in the headlong rush of the universe. And when it ends, she will have to face the future. And she is terrified. Because while he has been away, everything has changed. Today, here in the hallway of the Senate office building, she brings him news of a gift they have given each other, a gift of joy and of terror. The gift is the edge of a knife that has already cut their past from their future. For these long years, they have held each other only in secret, only in moments stolen from the business of the Republic and the war. Their love has been the perfect refuge. A long, quiet afternoon, warm and sunny, sealed away from fear and doubt, from duty and from danger. But now she carries within her a planetary terminator that will end their warm afternoon forever and leave them blind in the oncoming night. She is more now than Anakin Skywalker's wife. She is the mother of Anakin Skywalker's unborn child. After an all-too-brief eternity, the kiss finally ended. She clung to him, just breathing in the presence of him after so long, murmuring love against his broad, strong chest while he murmured love into the coils of her softly scented hair. Sometime later, she found words again.
Anakin, Anakin, oh, my Anakin, I can't believe you're home. They told me,
she almost choked on the memory,
there were whispers that you'd been killed. I couldn't. Every day.
Never believe stories like that, he whispered. Never. I will always come back to you, Padme. I've lived a year for every hour you were away. It's been a lifetime. Two. She reached up to the burn scar high on his cheek.
You were hurt.
Nothing serious, he said with a half smile. Just an unfriendly reminder to keep up with my lightsaber practice.
5 months.
It was almost a moan.
5 months? How could they do that to us?
He rested his cheek lightly on the crown of her head. If the Chancellor hadn't been kidnapped, I'd still be out there. It's terrible to say it, but I'm grateful. I'm glad he was kidnapped. It's like it was all arranged just to bring me home again. His arms were so strong and so warm, and his hand touched her hair in the softest caress, as though he was afraid she were as fragile as a dream. And he bent down for another kiss, a new kiss, a kiss that would wipe away every dark dream and all the days and hours and minutes of unbearable dread. But only steps away, the main vault of the atrium still held senators and holonet crews, and the knowledge of the price Anakin would pay when their love became known made her turn her face aside and put her hands on his chest to hold him away. Anakin, not here. It's too risky.
No, here.
Exactly here. He drew her against him again, effortlessly overpowering her half-hearted resistance. I'm tired of the deception, of the sneaking and the lying. We have nothing to be ashamed of. We love each other, and we are married. Just like trillions of beings across the galaxy. This is something we should shout, not whisper. No, Anakin, not like all those others. They are not Jedi. We can't let our love force you out of the order. Force me out of the order? He smiled down at her fondly. Was that a pun? Anakin. He could still make her angry without even trying. Listen to me. We have a duty to the Republic. Both of us. But yours is now so much more important. You are the face of the Jedi, Anakin. Even after these years of war, many people still love the Jedi, and it's mostly because they love you. Do you understand that? They love the story of you. You're like something out of a bedtime tale. The secret prince, hidden among the peasants, growing up without ever a clue of his special destiny. Except for you, it's all true. Sometimes I think that the only reason the people of the Republic still believe we can win the war is because you're fighting it for them. And it always comes back to politics for you, Anakin said. His smile had gone now. I'm barely even home, and you're already trying to talk me into going back to the war. This isn't about politics, Anakin. It's about you. Something has changed, hasn't it? Thunder gathered in his voice. I felt it, even outside. Something has changed. She lowered her head. Everything has changed.
What is it?
What? He took her by the shoulders now, his hands hard and irresistibly powerful. There's someone else. I can feel it in the Force. There is someone coming between us. Not the way you think, she said.
Anakin, listen.
Who is it? Who?
Stop it. Anakin, stop. You'll hurt us.
His hands sprang open as though she had burned them. He took an unsteady step backward, his face suddenly ashen.
Padme, I would never... I'm so sorry, I just...
He leaned on the pillar and brought a hand weakly to his eyes. The hero with no fear. What a joke.
Padme, I can't lose you. I can't. You're all I live for.
Wait. He lifted his head, frowning quizzically.
Did you say... us?
She reached for him, and he came to meet her hand. Rising tears burned her eyes, and her lip trembled.
I'm... Annie...
I'm pregnant. She watched him as everything their child would mean cycled through his mind, and her heart caught when she saw, first of all, the wild, almost explosive joy that dawned over his face. Because that meant that, whatever he had gone through on the Outer Rim, he was still her Annie. It meant that the war that had scarred his face had not scarred his spirit. And she watched that joy fade as he began to understand that their marriage could not stay hidden much longer, that even the voluminous robe she wore could not conceal a pregnancy forever, that he would be cast out in disgrace from the Jedi Order, that she would be relieved of her post and recalled to Naboo, that the very celebrity that had made him so important to the war would turn against them both, making them the freshest possible meat for an entire galaxy full of scandalmongers. And she watched him decide that he didn't care. "That is," he said slowly, that wild spark returning to his eyes. "Wonderful. Padme, that's wonderful. How long have you known?" She shook her head. "What are we going to do?" "We're going to be happy. That's what we're going to do. And we're going to be together, all three of us." "But..." "No." He laid a gentle finger on her lips, smiling down at her. "No buts. No worries. You worry too much as it is." "I have to," she said, smiling through the tears in her eyes. "Because you never worry at all." Anakin lurched upright in bed, gasping, staring blindly into alien darkness. How she had screamed for him. How she had begged for him. How her strength had failed on that alien table. How at the last she could only whimper, "Anakin, I'm sorry. I love you. I love you," thundered inside his head, blinding him to the contours of the night-shrouded room, deafening him to every sound save the turbo-hammer of his heart. His hand of flesh found unfamiliar coils of sweat-damp silken sheets around his waist. Finally, he remembered where he was. He half-turned, and she was with him, lying on her side, her glorious fall of hair fanned across her pillow, eyes closed, half a smile on her precious lips. And when he saw the long, slow rise and fall of her chest with the cycle of her breathing, he turned away and buried his face in his hands and sobbed. The tears that ran between his fingers then were tears of gratitude. She was alive, and she was with him. In silence so deep he could hear the whirring of the electrodrivers in his mechanical hand, he disentangled himself from the sheets and got up. Through the closet, a long curving sweep of stairs led to the veranda that overlooked Padme's private landing deck. Leaning on the night-chilled rail, Anakin stared out upon the endless nightscape of Coruscant. It was still burning. Coruscant at night had always been an endless galaxy of light, shining from trillions of windows in billions of buildings that reached kilometers into the sky, with navigation lights and advertising, and the infinite streams of speeders running lights coursing the rivers of traffic lanes overhead. But tonight, local power outages had swallowed ragged swaths of the city into vast nebulae of darkness, broken only by the malignant red dwarf glares of innumerable fires. Anakin didn't know how long he stood there staring. The city looked like he felt. Damaged. Broken in battle. Stained with darkness. And he'd rather look at the city than think about why he was out here looking at it in the first place. She moved more quietly than the smoky breeze, but he felt her approach. She took a place beside him at the railing and laid her soft human hand along the back of his hard mechanical one. And she simply stood with him, staring silently out across the city that had become her second home, waiting patiently for him to tell her what was wrong, trusting that he would. He could feel her patience and her trust, and he was so grateful for both that tears welled once more. He had to blink out at the burning night, and blink again to keep those fresh tears from spilling over onto his cheeks. He put his flesh hand on top of hers and held it gently until he could let himself speak. "It was a dream," he said finally. She accepted this with a slow, serious nod. "Bad? It was like the ones I used to have." He couldn't look at her. "About my mother." Again a nod, but even slower and more serious. "And He looked down at her small, slim fingers, and he slipped his between them, clasping their two hands into a knot of prayer. It was about you. Now she turned aside, leaning once more upon the rail, staring out into the night, and in the slowly pulsing rose glow of the distant fires, she was more beautiful than he had ever seen her. All right, she said softly. It was about me. Then she simply waited, still trusting. When Anakin could finally make himself tell her, his voice was raw and hoarse, as though he'd been shouting all day. It was about you dying, he said. I couldn't stand it. I can't stand it. He couldn't look at her. He looked at the city, at the deck, at the stars, and he found no place he could bear to see. All he could do was close his eyes. You're going to die in childbirth. Oh, she said. That was all. She had only a few months left to live. They had only a few months left to love each other. She would never see their child, and all she said was, oh. After a moment, the touch of her hand to his cheek brought his eyes open again, and he found her gazing up at him calmly. And the baby? He shook his head. I don't know. She nodded and pulled away, drifting toward one of the veranda chairs. She lowered herself into it and stared down at her hands, clasped together in her lap. He couldn't take it. He couldn't watch her be calm and accepting about her own death. He came to her side and knelt. It won't happen, Padme. I won't let it. I could have saved my mother. A day earlier, an hour, I... He bit down on the rising pain inside him and spoke through clenched teeth. This dream will not become real. She nodded. I didn't think it would. He blinked. You didn't? This is Coruscant, Annie, not Tatooine. Women don't die in childbirth on Coruscant. Not even the Twilighters in the down levels. And I have a top-flight medical droid who assures me I am in perfect health. Your dream must have been some kind of metaphor or something. My dreams are literal, Padme. I wouldn't know a metaphor if it bit me. And I couldn't see the place you were in. You might not even be on Coruscant. She looked away. I had been thinking about going somewhere. Somewhere else. Having the baby in secret to protect you, so you can stay in the Order. I don't want to stay in the Order. He took her face between his palms so that she had to look into his eyes, so that she had to see how much he meant every word he said. Don't protect me. I don't need it. We have to start thinking right now about how we can protect you. Because all I want is for us to be together. And we will be, she said. But there must be more to your dream than death and childbirth. That doesn't make any sense. I know. But I can't begin to guess what it might be. It's too... I can't even think about it, Padme. I'll go crazy. What are we going to do? She kissed the palm of his hand of flesh. We're going to do what you told me when I asked you the same question this afternoon. We're going to be happy together. But we can't just... Wait. I can't. I have to do something. Of course you do. She smiled fondly. That's who you are. That's what being a hero is. What about Obi-Wan? He frowned. What about him? You told me once that he is as wise as Yoda and as powerful as Mace Windu. Couldn't he help us? No. Anakin's chest clenched like a fist squeezing his heart. I can't. I'd have to tell him. He's your best friend, Annie. He must suspect already. It's one thing to have him suspect. It's something else to shove it in his face. He's still on the council. He'd have to report me and... And what? Is there something you haven't told me? He turned away. I'm not sure he's on my side. Your side? Anakin, what are you saying? He's on the Jedi Council, Padme. I know my name has come up for mastery. I'm more powerful than any Jedi Master alive, but someone is blocking me. Obi-Wan could tell me who and why, but he doesn't. I'm not sure he even stands up for me with them. I can't believe that. It has nothing to do with believing, he murmured, softly bitter. It's the truth.
There must be some reason, then. Anakin, he's your best friend. He loves you.
Maybe he does. But I don't think he trusts me. His eyes went as bleak as the empty night. And I'm not sure we can trust him.
Anakin! She clutched at his arm. What would make you say that?
None of them trust me, Padme. None of them. You know what I feel when they look at me?
Anakin.
He turned to her, and everything in him ached. He wanted to cry, and he wanted to rage, and he wanted to make his rage a weapon that would cut himself free forever.
Fear, he said. I feel their fear. And for nothing.
He could show them something, though. He could show them a reason for their fear. He could show them what he discovered within himself in the general's quarters on Invisible Hand. Something of it must have risen on his face, because he saw a flicker of doubt shadow her eyes just for a second, just a flash. But still, it burned into him like a lightsaber, and he shuddered. And his shudder turned into a shiver that became shaking. And he gathered her to his chest and buried his face in her hair, and the strong, sweet warmth of her cooled him just enough.
Padme, he murmured. Oh, Padme, I'm so sorry. Forget I said anything. None of that matters now. I'll be gone from the Order soon. Because I will not let you go away to have our baby in some alien place. I will not let you face my dream alone. I will be there for you, Padme. Always. No matter what.
I know it, Annie. I know.
She pulled gently away and looked up at him. Tears sparkled like red gems in the firelight. Red, as the synthetic bloodshine of Dooku's lightsaber. He closed his eyes. She said,
Come upstairs, Anakin. The night's getting cold. Come up to our bed.
All right.
All right. He found that he could breathe again, and his shaking had stilled.
Just...
He put his arm around her shoulder so that he didn't have to meet her eyes.
Just don't say anything to Obi-Wan, all right?
Chapter 10 Masters Obi-Wan sat beside Mace Windu while they watched Yoda scan the report. Here, in Yoda's simple living space within the Jedi Temple, every softly curving pod chair and knurled organiform table hummed with gentle, comforting power. The same warm strength that Obi-Wan remembered enfolding him even as an infant. These chambers had been Yoda's home for more than 800 years. Everything within them echoed with the harmonic resonance of Yoda's calm wisdom, tuned through centuries of his touch. To sit within Yoda's chambers was to inhale serenity. To Obi-Wan, this was a great gift in these troubled times. But when Yoda looked at them through the translucent shimmer of the holo-projected report on the contents of the latest amendment to the Security Act, his eyes were anything but calm. They had gone narrow and cold, and his ears had flattened back along his skull.
This report, from where does it come?
The Jedi still have friends in the Senate. Mace Windu replied in his grim monotone. For now.
When presented this amendment is passed it will be?
Mace nodded. My source expects passage by acclamation. Overwhelming passage. Perhaps as early as this afternoon.
Chancellor's goal in this. Unclear to me it is.
Yoda said slowly.
Though nominally in command of the Council, the Senate may place him. The Jedi he cannot control. Moral, our authority has always been, much more than merely legal. Simply follow orders, Jedi do not.
I don't think he intends to control the Jedi, Mace said. By placing the Jedi Council under the control of the office of the Supreme Chancellor, this amendment will give him the constitutional authority to disband the order itself.
Surely you cannot believe this is his intention.
His intention? Mace said darkly. Perhaps not. But his intentions are irrelevant. All that matters now is the intent of the Sith Lord who has our government in his grip. And the Jedi Order may be all that stands between him and galactic domination. What do you think he will do?
Authority to disband the Jedi? The Senate would never grant.
The Senate will vote to grant exactly that, this afternoon.
The implications of this, they must not comprehend.
It no longer matters what they comprehend, May said. They know where the power is.
But even disbanded, even without legal authority, still Jedi we would be. Jedi Knights served the Force long before there was a Galactic Republic. And serve it we will when this Republic is but dust.
Master Yoda, that day may be coming sooner than any of us think. That day may be today. Mace shot a frustrated look at Obi-Wan, who picked up his cue smoothly. We don't know what the Sith Lord's plans may be, Obi-Wan said, but we can be certain that Palpatine is not to be trusted, not anymore. This draft resolution is not the product of some overzealous senator. We may be sure Palpatine wrote it himself and passed it along to someone he controls to make it look like the Senate is once more forcing him to reluctantly accept extra powers in the name of security. We are afraid that they will continue to do so until one day he's forced to reluctantly accept dictatorship for life. I am convinced this is the next step in a plot aimed directly at the heart of the Jedi, May said. This is a move toward our destruction. The dark side of the Force surrounds the Chancellor. Obi-Wan added, as it has surrounded and cloaked the Separatists since even before the war began. If the Chancellor is being influenced through the dark side, this whole war may have been, from the beginning, a plot by the Sith to destroy the Jedi Order.
Speculation!
Yoda thumped the floor with his gimmer stick, making his hover chair bob gently.
On theories such as these, we cannot rely. Proof we need. Proof!
Proof may be a luxury we cannot afford. A dangerous light had entered Mace Windu's eyes. We must be ready to act.
Act?
Obi-Wan asked mildly. He cannot be allowed to move against the Order. He cannot be allowed to prolong the war needlessly. Too many Jedi have died already. He is dismantling the Republic itself. I have seen life outside the Republic. So have you, Obi-Wan. Slavery. Torture. Endless war. Mace's face darkened with the same distant, haunted shadow Obi-Wan had seen him wear the day before. I have seen it in Nar Shadda, and I saw it on Harun Kal. I saw what it did to Deepa and to Sora Bulk. Whatever its flaws, the Republic is our sole hope for justice and for peace. It is our only defense against the dark. Palpatine may be about to do what the Separatists cannot. Bring down the Republic. If he tries, he must be removed from office.
Removed? Obi-Wan said. You mean arrested?
Yoda shook his head.
To a dark place, this line of thought will lead us. Great care we must take.
The Republic is civilization. It's the only one we have. Mace looked deeply into Yoda's eyes and into Obi-Wan's, and Obi-Wan could feel the heat in the Koran Master's gaze. We must be prepared for radical action. It is our duty.
But, Obi-Wan protested numbly, you're talking about treason.
I'm not afraid of words, Obi-Wan. If it's treason, then so be it. I would do this right now if I had the Council's support. The real treason, Mace said, would be failure to act.
Such an act. Destroy the Jedi Order it could,
Yoda said.
Lost the trust of the public we have already.
No disrespect, Master Yoda. Mace interrupted. But that's a politician's argument. We can't let public opinion stop us from doing what's right.
Convinced it is right, I am not,
Yoda said severely.
Working behind the scenes we should be, to uncover Lord Sidious. To move against Palpatine while the Sith still exist. This may be part of the Sith plan itself. To turn the Senate and the public against the Jedi. so that we are not only disbanded, but outlawed.
Mace was half out of his pod. To wait gives the Sith the advantage.
Have the advantage already, they do.
Yoda jabbed at him with his gimmer stick.
Increase their advantage we will if in haste we act.
Masters, masters, please, Obi-Wan said. He looked from one to the other and inclined his head respectfully. Perhaps there is a middle way.
Ah, of course. Kenobi the negotiator.
Mace Windu settled back into his seating pod.
I should have guessed. That is why you asked for this meeting, isn't it? To mediate our differences, if you can.
So sure of your skills you are.
Yoda folded his fists around the head of his stick.
Easy to negotiate, this matter is not.
Obi-Wan kept his head down. It seems to me, he said carefully, that Palpatine himself has given us an opening. He has said, both to you, Master Windu, and in the Holonet address he gave following his rescue, that General Grievous is the true obstacle to peace. Let us forget about the rest of the Separatist leadership for now. Let Newt Gunray and San Hill and the rest run wherever they like, while we put every available Jedi and all of our agents, the whole of Republic intelligence if we can, to work on locating Grievous himself. This will force the hand of the Sith Lord. He will know that Grievous cannot elude our full efforts for long, once we devote ourselves exclusively to his capture. It will draw Sidious out. He will have to make some sort of move, if he wishes the war to continue.
If, Mace said, the war has been a Sith operation from the beginning, with Dooku on one side and Sidious on the other. It has always been a plot aimed at us, at the Jedi, to bleed us dry of our youngest and best, to make us into something we were never intended to be.
He shook his head bitterly. I had the truth in my hands years ago. Back on Harun Kal, in the first months of the war. I had it, but I did not understand how right I was.
Seen glimpses of this truth we all have,
Yoda said sadly.
Our arrogance it is, which has stopped us from fully opening our eyes.
Until now, Obi-Wan put in gently. We understand now the goal of the Sith Lord. We know his tactics, and we know where to look for him. His actions will reveal him. He cannot escape us. He will not escape us.
Yoda and Mace frowned at each other for one long moment. Then both of them turned to Obi-Wan and inclined their heads in mirrors of his respectful bow.
Seen to the heart of the matter, young Kenobi has.
Mace nodded. Yoda and I will remain on Coruscant, monitoring Palpatine's advisors and lackeys. We'll move against Sidious the instant he is revealed. But who will capture Grievous? I have fought him blade to blade. He is more than a match for most Jedi.
We'll worry about that once we find him, Obi-Wan said. A slight wistful smile crept over his face. If I listen hard enough, I can almost hear Qui-Gon reminding me that until the possible becomes actual, it is only a distraction.
General Grievous stood wide-legged, hands folded behind him, as he stared out through the reinforced viewport at the towering sphere of the Geonosian dreadnought. The immense ship looked small, though, against the scale of the vast sinkhole that rose around it. This was Utapau, a remote backworld on the fringe of the Outer Rim. At ground level, far above where Grievous stood now, the planet appeared to be a featureless ball of barren rock, scoured flat by endless hyperwinds. From orbit, though, its cities and factories and spaceports could be seen as the planet's rotation brought its cavernous sinkholes one at a time into view. These sinkholes were the size of inverted mountains, and every available square meter of their interior walls was packed with city, and every square meter of every city was under the guns of Separatist war droids, making sure that the Utapauans behaved themselves. Utapau had no interest in the Clone Wars. It had never been a member of the Republic, and had carefully maintained a stance of quiet neutrality, right up until Grievous had conquered it. Neutrality in these times was a joke. A planet was neutral only so long as neither the Republic nor the Confederacy wanted it. If Grievous could laugh, he would have. The members of the Separatist leadership scurried across the Permacrete landing platform like the alley rats they were, scampering for the ship that would take them to the safety of the newly constructed base on Mustafar. But one alley rat was missing from the scuttle. Grievous shifted his gaze fractionally and found the reflection of Newt Gunray in the transparasteel. The Nymoidian viceroy stood dithering in the control center's doorway. Grievous regarded the reflection of the bulbous, cold-blooded eyes below the tall, peaked miter.
Gunray!
He made no other motion.
Why are you still here?
Something should be said privately, General.
The Viceroy's reflection cast glances either way along the hallway beyond the door.
I am disturbed by this new move. You told us that Utapa would be safe for us. Why is the Leadership Council being moved now to Mustafar?
Grievous sighed. He had no time for lengthy explanations. He was expecting a secret transmission from Sidious himself. He could not take the transmission with Gunray in the room, nor could he follow his natural inclinations and boot the Nymoidian viceroy so high he'd burn up on re-entry. Grievous still hoped every day that Lord Sidious would give him leave to smash the skulls of Gunray and his toady Rune Hako. Repulsive, sniveling, grub-greedy scum, both of them. And the rest of the Separatist leadership was every bit as vile. But for now, a pretense of cordiality had to be maintained.
Utapau,
Grievous said slowly, as though explaining to a child,
is a hostile planet under military occupation. It was never intended to be more than a stopgap, while the defenses of the base on Mustafar were completed. Now that they are, Mustafar is the most secure planet in the galaxy. The stronghold prepared for you can withstand the entire Republic Navy.
It should, Gunray muttered. Construction nearly bankrupted the Trade Federation.
Don't whine to me about money, Viceroy. I have no interest in it.
You had better, General. It's my money that finances this entire war. It's my money that pays for that body you wear, and for those insanely expensive Magna Guards of yours. It's my money!
Grievous moved so swiftly that he seemed to teleport from the window to half a meter in front of Gunray.
How much use is your money?
He said, flexing his hand of jointed duranium in the Nymoidian's face.
Against this?
Gunray flinched and backed away.
I was only... I have some concerns about your ability to keep us safe, General, that's all. We, the Trade Federation, cannot work in a climate of fear. What about the Jedi?
Forget the Jedi. They do not enter into this equation.
They will be entering into that base soon enough.
The base is secure. It can stand against 1,000 Jedi, 10,000.
Do you hear yourself? Are you mad?
What I am,
Grievous replied evenly,
is unaccustomed to having my orders challenged.
We are the Leadership Council. You cannot give us orders. We give the orders here.
Are you certain of that? Would you care to wager?
Grievous leaned close enough that he could see the reflection of his mask in Gunray's rose-colored eyes.
Shall we say... bet your life on it.
Gunray kept on backing away.
You tell us we'll be safe on Mustafar, but you also told us you would deliver Palpatine as a hostage, and he managed to escape your grip.
Be thankful, Viceroy,
Grievous said, admiring the smooth flexion of his finger joints, as though his hand were some species of exotic predator.
That you have not found yourself in my grip.
He went back to the viewport and reassumed his original position, legs wide, hands clasped behind his back.
To look on the sickly pink and Gunray's pale green cheeks for 1 second longer was to risk forgetting his orders and splattering the Viceroy's brains from here to Ord Mantell.
Your ship is waiting.
His auditory sensors clearly picked up the slither of Gunray's sandals retreating along the corridor. And not a second too soon, his sensors were also registering the whine of the control center's holocom warming up. He turned to face the disk, and when the annunciator chimed to indicate the incoming transmission, he pressed the accept key and knelt. Head down, he could see only the scanned image of the hem of the great lord's robes. But that was all he needed to see.
Yes, Lord Zilius.
Have you moved the Separatist Council to Mustafar?
Yes, Master.
He risked a glance out the viewport. Most of the Council had reached the starship. Gunray should be joining them any second. Grievous had seen firsthand how fast the Viceroy could run, given proper motivation.
This ship will lift off within moments.
Well done, my General. Now you must turn your hand to preparing our trap there on Utapau. The Jedi hunt you personally at last. You must be ready for their attack.
Yes, Master.
I am arranging matters to give you a second chance to do my bidding, Grievous. Expect that the Jedi sent to capture you will be Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Kenobi?
Grievous's fists clenched hard enough that his carpal electrodrivers whined in protest.
And Skywalker?
I believe Skywalker will be otherwise engaged.
Grievous dropped his head even lower.
I will not fail you again, my master. Kenobi will die.
See to it.
Master, if I may trouble you with boldness, why did you not let me kill Chancellor Palpatine? We may never get a better chance.
The time was not yet ripe. Patience, my general. The end of the war is near, and victory is certain.
Even with the loss of Count Dooku?
Dooku was not lost. He was sacrificed. A strategic sacrifice, as one offers up a piece in Dejarik, to draw the opponent into a fatal blunder.
I was never much the Dejarik player, my master. I prefer real war.
And you shall have your fill, I promise you.
This fatal blunder you speak of, if I may once again trouble you with boldness.
You will come to understand soon enough.
Grievous could hear the smile in his master's voice.
All will be clear once you meet my new apprentice.
Anakin finger-combed his hair as he trotted out across the restricted landing deck atop the temple ziggurat near the base of the High Council Tower. Far across the expanse of deck stood the Supreme Chancellor's shuttle. Anakin squinted at it and at the two tall red-robed guards that stood flanking its open access ramp. And coming toward him from the direction of the shuttle, shielding his eyes and leaning against the morning wind that whipped across the unprotected field, was that Obi-Wan? Finally, Anakin muttered. He'd scoured the temple for his former master. He'd nearly given up hope of finding him when a passing Padawan had mentioned that he'd seen Obi-Wan on his way out to the landing deck to meet Palpatine's shuttle. He hoped Obi-Wan wouldn't notice he hadn't changed his clothes. It wasn't like he could explain. Though his secret couldn't last, he wasn't ready for it to come out just yet. He and Padme had agreed last night that they would keep it as long as they could. He wasn't ready to leave the Jedi Order, not while she was still in danger. Padme had said that his nightmare must be only a metaphor, but he knew better. He knew that Force prophecy was not absolute, but his had never been wrong. Not in the slightest detail. He had known as a boy that he would be chosen by the Jedi. He had known his adventures would span the galaxy. As a mere 9-year-old, long before he even understood what love was, he had looked upon Padme Amidala's flawless face and seen there that she would love him, and that they would someday marry. There had been no metaphor in his dreams of his mother, screaming in pain, tortured to death.
I knew you would come to me, Annie.
I missed you so much.
He could have saved her. Maybe. It had always seemed so obvious to him that if he had only returned to Tatooine a day earlier, an hour, he could have found his mother and she would still be alive. And yet, the great prophets of the Jedi had always taught that the gravest danger in trying to prevent a vision of the future from coming to pass is that in doing so, a Jedi can actually bring it to pass. As though, if he'd run away in time to save his mother, he might have made himself somehow responsible for her death. As though, if he tried to save Padme, he could end up, blankly impossible though it was, killing her himself. But to do nothing? To simply wait for Padme to die? Could something be more than impossible? When a Jedi had a question about the deepest subtleties of the Force, there was one source to whom he could always turn. And so, first thing that morning, without even taking time to stop by his own quarters for a change of clothing, Anakin had gone to Yoda for advice. He'd been surprised by how graciously the ancient Jedi Master had invited him into his quarters, and by how patiently Yoda had listened to his stumbling attempts to explain his question without giving away his secret. Yoda had never made any attempt to conceal what had always seemed to Anakin to be a gruff disapproval of Anakin's very existence. But this morning, despite clearly having other things on his mind, even Anakin's Force perceptions, far from the most subtle, had detected echoes of conflict and worry within the Master's chamber. Yoda had simply offered Anakin a place on one of the softly rounded pod seats and suggested that they meditate together. He hadn't even asked for details. Anakin had been so grateful, and so relieved, and so unexpectedly hopeful, that he'd found tears welling into his eyes, and some few minutes had been required for him to compose himself into proper Jedi serenity. After a time, Yoda's eyes had slowly opened, and the deep furrows of his ancient brow had deepened further.
"Premonitions. Premonitions. Deep questions they are. Sense the future, once all Jedi could. Now few alone have the skill. Visions, gifts from the Force, and curses, signposts and snares. These visions of yours..."
"They are of pain," Anakin had said. "Of suffering." He had barely been able to make himself add, "and death."
"In these troubled times, no surprise this is. Yourself, you see, or someone you know?"
Anakin had not trusted himself to answer.
"Someone close to you?"
Yoda had prompted gently. "Yes," Anakin had replied, eyes turned away from Yoda's too wise stare. Let him think he was talking about Obi-Wan. It was close enough. Yoda's voice was still gentle and understanding.
"The fear of loss is a path to the dark side, young one."
"I won't let my visions come true, Master. I won't."
"Rejoice for those who transform into the Force. Mourn them not. Miss them not."
"Then why do we fight at all, Master? Why save anybody?"
"Speaking of anybody, we are not,"
Yoda had said sternly.
"Speaking of you and your vision and your fear, we are. The shadow of greed, attachment is. What you fear to lose, train yourself to release. Let go of fear, and loss cannot harm you."
Which was when Anakin had realized Yoda wasn't going to be any help at all. The greatest sage of the Jedi Order had nothing better to offer him than more pious babble about letting things pass out of his life, like he hadn't heard that a million times already. Easy for him. Who had Yoda ever cared about, really cared about? Of one thing Anakin was certain, the ancient master had never been in love. Or he would have known better than to expect Anakin to just fold his hands and close his eyes and settle in to meditate while what was left of Padme's life evaporated like the ghost mist of dew in a Tatooine winter dawn. So all that had been left for him was to find some way to respectfully extricate himself. And then go find Obi-Wan. Because he wasn't about to give up. Not in this millennium. The Jedi Temple was the greatest nexus of Force energy in the Republic. Its ziggurat design focused the Force the way a lightsaber's gemstone focused its energy stream. With the thousands of Jedi and Padawans within it every day contemplating peace, seeking knowledge, and meditating on justice and surrender to the will of the Force, the temple was a fountain of the light. Just being on its rooftop landing deck sent a surge of power through Anakin's whole body. If the Force was ever to show him a way to change the dark future of his nightmares, it would do so here. The Jedi Temple also contained the Archives, the vast library that encompassed the Order's entire 25 millennia of existence. Everything, from the widest-ranging cosmographical surveys to the intimate journals of a billion Jedi Knights. It was there Anakin hoped to find everything that was known about prophetic dreams, and everything that was known about preventing these prophecies from coming to pass. His only problem was that the deepest secrets of the greatest masters of the Force were stored in restricted holocrons. Since the Lorian-Nod affair, some 70 standard years before, access to these holocrons was denied to all but Jedi Masters. And he couldn't exactly explain to the Archives Master why he wanted them. But now here was Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan would help him. Anakin knew he would. If only Anakin could figure out the right way to ask. While he was still hunting for words, Obi-Wan reached him. You missed the report on the Outer Rim sieges. I was held up, Anakin said. I have no excuse. That, at least, was true. Is Palpatine here? Anakin asked. It was a convenient enough way to change the subject. Has something happened? Quite the opposite, Obi-Wan said. That shuttle did not bring the Chancellor. It is waiting to bring you to him. Waiting for me? Anakin frowned. Worries and lack of sleep had his head full of fog. He couldn't make this make sense. He patted his robes vacantly. But my beacon hasn't gone off. If the Council wanted me, why didn't they? The Council, Obi-Wan said, has not been consulted. I don't understand. Nor do I. Obi-Wan stepped close, nodding minutely back toward the shuttle. They simply arrived some time ago. When the deck duty Padawans questioned them, they said the Chancellor has requested your presence. Why wouldn't he go through the Council? Perhaps he has some reason to believe, Obi-Wan said carefully, that the Council might have resisted sending you. Perhaps he did not wish to reveal his reason for this summons. Relations between the Council and the Chancellor are stressed. A queasy knot began to tie itself behind Anakin's ribs. Obi-Wan, what's going on? Something's wrong, isn't it? You know something, I can tell. No. Only suspect. Which is not at all the same thing. Anakin remembered what he'd said to Padme about exactly that last night. The queasy knot tightened. And that's why I am out here, Anakin, so I can talk to you. Privately. Not as a member of the Jedi Council. In fact, if the Council were to find out about this conversation, well, let's say I'd rather they didn't. What conversation? I still don't know what's going on. None of us does. Not really. Obi-Wan put a hand on Anakin's shoulder